A black and white image of the Gothic clock tower housing Big Ben. London Films present. Ian Dalrymple's Wessex Film Production. Leo Genn in The Wooden Horse with David Tomlinson and Anthony Steele. Screenplay advanced from his novel by Eric Williams, music composed by Clifton Parker, played by the London Symphony Orchestra. Characters: Peter, Leo Genn, Phil, David Tomlinson, John, Anthony Steele, Bennett, David Green, Nigel, Peter Burton, Senior British Officer, Patrick Waddington, Robbie, Michael Goodliffe. Pomfret, Anthony Dawson, Paul, Brian Forbes, David, Dan Cunningham, Australian in Hospital, Peter Finch, Bill White, Philip Dale, Wings Cameron, Russell Waters, Adjutant, Ralph Ward. Camp Commandant, Franz Schaffheitlin, Charlie, Head Ferret, Hans Meyer, Camp Guard, Herbert Eilitz, Kammer, Liz Louvert. Andre, Jacques Brunwy, Sigmund, Helga Eriksson, Hotel Proprietor, Meinhard Maurer, The Follower, Walter Gotel, German Policeman, Walter Hertner. Directed by Jack Lee, produced by Ian Dalrymple. It is the constant hope of nearly every prisoner of war, if not indeed his duty, to escape and rejoin his unit. This film shows how three British officers carried out an actual escape from a German camp in the last war. It was made mostly in Germany and Denmark, with the help of the British War Office and Air Ministry, and of Danish and German civilians. Summer 1943, Stalag Luft 3, a camp for officers run by the German Air Force. In black and white, morning. Nigel, a man with a thin moustache, is staring out from the bunkroom window of a prisoner's hut. He yawns, climbs back into his bunk, draws up his sheets and blankets, and surveys comrades in the nearby beds. John, the man in the bunk immediately below, smiles in his sleep and turns his face to the wall. Another man, Peter, is wide awake. He turns his attentions to Paul, a man in a nearby top bunk, who's sleeping fitfully. In his dreams, Paul's plunging through cloud as the ground rises up to meet him. He rolls and drapes his arm over the side of the wooden pallet, drawing the attention of Pomfret, his comrade in the bunk below, who's leafing through a book. Robbie takes a portrait of an attractive girl from a shelf beside his bed and smiles fondly at it. He wistfully fastens it to the bottom of the pallet above, where David, a bearded man with wavy hair, is sketching an unflattering caricature of Bennett, the round-faced officer with a bushy moustache nearby. Bennett rolls over, pops a cigarette in his mouth, and scratches his chest. Peter's thoughts aloud.
I knew it all so well. A pair of legs covered with long sandy hair would appear over the side of the bunk above. Legs that would wriggle their toes disgustingly as their owner prepared to land like an avalanche. I tensed myself expectantly for the routine. Crash, bang, the whole hut shook. Heavy footsteps stamped across the room. The sound of a spoon being stirred violently inside a pottery mug. The empty mug banged down on the table. More heavy footsteps. Then the whole room shook again as the door slammed.
Noisy lot.
A guard removes a barricade from the door of the stilt hut, and Bennett stumbles out. Inside, Robbie hands a mug to Peter.
Breakfast, please, your cook.
Okay, Robbie.
Peter takes a loaf of bread from a box.
What's the weather like?
Perfect day for asking.
Mine. Sorry.
Nigel's fiddling with his moustache.
What do you keep doing that for? You'll wear the thing out.
I like it. Feels as though someone else is doing it.
You're crazy. Give John a call, will you?
What, wake the child?
Nigel rattles a tin on a string in John's face.
Louder. Let his bunk down.
Must you be so hearty?
Pomfret storms out.
Come in the block.
Aus!
Oh, Deutschland kaputt.
Aus!
Go on, push off. We don't speak German here.
Careful, Paul. You'll be in the cooler again.
Verbinde mir das! Aber als ob Sie haben sich Anschicht zu benehmen.
Steady, Paul.
Ich habe das Deutsche Reich bereit, ich werde Sie sofort abführen lassen.
Oh, shove off.
Herr Feldwebel, dieser Gefangene hat sich ungebührlich benommen. Er sagte Deutschland kaputt.
A senior guard.
So, ich war impertinent again, eh?
I object to being shouted at.
Come!
Okay, suits me. See you soon, boys.
Raus! Alles raus, Ben!
Now it's roll call. The German guard walks along the line of men, counting the inmates on parade for the British adjutant and the camp commandant.
Parade! Attend! Gun!
The commandant salutes them.
Good morning, my man.
Later, in the camp washhouse, the men are showering or scrubbing their dirty laundry with bars of soap. Peter cheerfully looks up from his efforts.
Parcels today, John.
Good chef.
If we get any sardines, we'll swap them for biscuits. Then we can make a cake.
We'd better bake it this afternoon. And if it turns out to be a pudding, we can have it for dinner.
If it turns out to be porridge, we can have it for breakfast.
Nothing like having a plan. Soap?
Hey!
Sorry, Bill.
Nearly swallowed it.
How's it going?
Piece of cake, old man. Done 40 feet.
Bill's digging under the floorboards and passing up buckets of dirt to be concealed in the roof space. A signal from outside.
Third approaching.
Bill emerges from the floor and takes a shower while the entrance is covered with a floorboard and splashed with water.
Here he comes. He's stopped outside hut 66.
Nigel's keeping watch.
He's looking under the hut.
The guard heads for the wash house.
He's coming this way now. It's Charlie.
Charlie looks to and fro, then turns on his heel and walks off.
He's gone away.
Coming round the circuit?
Okay.
Bill stepped out of the shower.
Right, let's open it up again.
John and Peter are tying their laundry to a washing line outside.
Bill White must be almost under here.
Hasn't got a chance. Look how far he's got to go.
He chose the hut nearest the wire.
Still much too far. All of 300 feet. Take him 6 months at least.
He's done 40 feet. That leaves 260 feet to go, still inside the camp.
They walk along a low fence.
This is the important place, these last few feet under the wire. It's the same old problem. The longer the tunnel, the longer it takes to dig, and the longer time the goons have to spot it. What we've got to do is start a short tunnel right out here on the circuit.
Yes, I know. We've discussed it a million times. It's as bare as a billiard table. How are you going to camouflage it?
Thank you! Thank you.
Peter signals to a guard.
Okay.
Okay.
A football's landed in the no-man's land between the fence and the barbed wire perimeter. With the approval of the armed watchtower guard, Peter retrieves it and punts it back to the soccer players.
That's what we want. Some nice innocent camp activity that goes on all the time, like football.
It did happen once in my last camp. A chap brought out an accordion and a bunch of chaps sat around singing. Dug a hole in the middle and put the loose sand in their pockets. Got as deep as around the first day. Then they boarded over and spread loose sand over the boards.
And then?
Well, that night a ferret trod on the boards, fell in and broke his leg.
Well, we can't use that one. Must be a classic by now. Oh, Lord, potatoes. Sorry, chum. See you later.
Peter walks away, and a grin spreads across John's face as he watches some of the prisoners leapfrogging over each other's backs nearby.
A classic.
Give over, I'm caught.
This is a hell of a life, Pete.
Sometimes wonder if it's better or worse for you married chaps. At least you've got something waiting for you.
I have a feeling that life's passing me by. By the time I get back, it'll be too late. She's not doing anything. Not even fighting.
Clinton's running.
Peter briefly joins David at the bunkroom window to watch John racing across the compound.
I'd give anything to get out of this place, even if it's only for a few days. Just to do the ordinary things again. Use a telephone. Walk on grass. Carpets. Walk up and down stairs. Use a lift. Spend money. And have to make a decision.
Pete.
What?
John takes Peter aside for a private chat.
Pete, I think I've got it.
What?
How to hide the start of a tunnel near the wire. A Trojan horse.
A what?
You know the ancient Greeks. They built a wooden horse and put armed men inside it. Then we'll make a vaulting horse. Just like one of those things we had at school. One of us can be underneath digging while the other chaps vault. Then they can take us out and bring us back inside the horse.
Have to be a heck of a strong horse.
Oh, we'll make the horse all right. Let's go and see the escape committee.
Well, let's think this out first.
Now let's go now and register the idea. Well, somebody else might think of it at any moment.
Sure to. Okay, we'll go this evening.
Okay.
You propose to take this thing out with a bloke inside, day after day, to cover up his shaft.
That's right, sir.
Bit far-fetched, isn't it?
At least it's something new, sir.
We can't give committee support to every wildcat scheme just because it's new.
There's nothing wildcat about this, sir. It's perfectly feasible.
All right, Hard. We'll discuss it again later. You've got to build your horse first.
We'll build the horse, sir.
Goon's coming in, sir.
Lock-up time already. Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, good night, sir.
Okay, Pete. We're out.
All we need is the horse.
Look, what we want is a few pieces of wood about that long and about that thick.
About that thick?
Okay. We're climbing tonight.
They've spotted some lumber near a hut under construction. Night. A watchtower guard aims a machine gun at the compound, while another shines a searchlight beam across the camp. A guard sets a dog loose amongst the huts. Pomfret and David are playing chess.
Check.
While Peter and John are putting on camouflage makeup, Pomfret winces as Bennett bashes at a piece of metalwork.
Bennett! Bennett!
Hello.
Must you?
When I start something, I finish it, old boy.
Heaven help the happy bride.
What's that?
Check. Let's see you get yourself out of that one.
How's this?
You're beautiful. Cutters. Saw.
How's the time?
20:28.
Ready?
2 minutes.
Dog outside.
Now you fumbled there. You're uncovering your queen, old boy.
The dog's sniffing at the next hut.
Time turning out going.
8:30.
In hut 61, an officer checks his watch and turns out the lights. He lifts a piece of flooring, then lies down with his head over the hole.
Come on, boy. Come on.
The dog scampers over.
All clear, he's gone.
The lights are turned out in the bunk room and Peter hands his watch to Nigel.
Go.
Peter and John slip through a hole in the floor and crawl through the short wooden stilts of the open footings. They run so far, then hit the dirt as the searchlight beam sweeps by.
They've got as far as the canteen.
They run alongside the walls of a hut, then pause at a corner.
After the next beam.
As the beam moves on, they run across the compound and lie on the ground as they snip at the chain-link fence surrounding the unfinished building. In hut 61...
Puss, puss, puss! Puss, puss, puss!
Two inmates keep the German Shepherd guard dog busy by taking it in turns to call it from one end of the hut to the other.
Puss, puss, puss!
Having cut through the fence, Peter and John scuttle through the construction site. Inside the unfinished building, John turns over a small trowel between his fingers, then joins Peter as they busy themselves with lengths of wood. Between them, They lay out a beam between a pair of posts. Then Peter reaches into his tunic for a saw wrapped in a piece of cloth. He shoots a grin at John as he starts to cut. Day. Peter knocks at a workshop door signed The Creagy Construction Company, President, Wing Commander D. Cameron. Peter goes inside and looks around with admiration. An RAF officer with a handlebar moustache pops up from behind a wooden gadget on a bench and nods a greeting to Peter.
Oh, morning, Wing. What is it?
Air conditioning plant.
I'll show you.
Cameron emerges.
You see? I turn this handle. The pulley operates a fan under the floor. Cold air's forced up from under the hat.
What happens to the hot air?
Goes out through a hole in the roof. Here, if you've time to waste, I have...
No, Wings. It's about the camouflage for our hole that I wanted to see. I want to make a vaulting horse.
Huh?
It's got to be a strong one. Carry a man.
The Creagy Construction Company is at your disposal. Thanks, Wings.
Look. May I?
Oh, of course. Yeah, just
drawing a plan.
Right. Now, it's got to be 5 foot long and 4 foot high with a padded top.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the timber for the frame. Now, the sides will have to be made of plywood or something light to minimize the weight.
Oh, parcel boxes.
Fine. Now, we want... two bars going through for the bearers. And a man will sit on one and carry back the sand in bags made of old trouser legs and hung on movable hooks.
Donaldson, 67.
A Get Fit Now poster.
Put me down, John.
Hopkins.
Pratt?
67.
Craig, 65.
I'll have a go.
How about your leg?
Oh, that's okay now.
Okay, John. Ah, Bennett, just the man we want. You going to vault?
No, old boy. He'd go slap through the horse.
The commandant has spotted the poster.
What is this?
Oh, nothing much. Only a gym class, you know.
Ach so. Oh, this is graceful exercise.
The trapezoidal horse under construction, then the finished product being placed in the compound for its debut. Wooden beams slotted through the body of the horse are removed, and the men line up. Paul is first to take a running jump over the horse, then waits to help the other over the padded top.
Now, come on up and over.
A guard watches the activity through a pair of binoculars from a watchtower. The senior British officer and Peter watch from inside one of the huts. Paul helps one of the inmates over, then a skinny man takes a run-up, but cries off at the last moment. Two more of the bare-chested prisoners go over, then the skinny man, Phil, has another go and crashes into the side of the horse. The tower guard smirks, and Charlie regards the activity impassively. As Nigel successfully clears the horse, he comes to stop beside Pomfret, who's standing idly by, smoking.
Good turnout, eh?
Huh. You wait till you've been at it a few weeks.
Oh.
Come on, Jeff, come on. Come on, Phil. Keep up,
Alan. Phil flexes his limbs and adjusts his shorts. He hesitates, takes a few steps back for a longer run-up, then crashes into the side of the horse and pulls it over. The horse is an empty shell. Stony-faced Charlie takes a step forward. Peter and the senior officer.
Carefully planned, sir. Shows the goons there's nothing inside.
Well, sir, here's the horse, and here's the surface of the ground. And here's the shaft about 5 feet deep. And here we have a trap door, about 18 inches down, in case the fellows start to probe. We cover the trap door with small sandbags beneath the top sand, so that we can get at it quickly. And here's the tunnel running away towards the wire. The first 10 feet will be shored up, top and sides.
Will 10 feet be enough?
Yes, sir, enough to take the impact of the vaulters landing above.
How do you find the same position for the horse each time?
Well, that's easy. We sight it from the marks made by the chap's feet on landing.
And how long's the whole job going to take you?
We hope about 4 weeks, sir.
You mean 4 months? The sooner you get cracking, the better. All right, Clinton. We'll back you up. Good luck.
Thanks, sir.
Good night.
Good night.
Better burn this, Stafford.
Peter's weighing tins.
There you are, John. Pound of sand. Bag holds about 10 pounds. 12 bags a trip, that means we can't bring back more than 120 pounds at a time. It's going to take nearly 6 weeks than four.
I'd better start digging tomorrow.
I mustn't hurry the goons. We've got to get used to the vaulting before we start to dig.
That means we shall only be doing about 3 feet a day.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we can't go on asking the chaps to vault day after day for nothing. We must get a move on, Pete.
Once upon a time, there were two bulls, an old bull and a young bull. One day the young bull said to the old bull, farmers left the gate open, there's some cows in that field. Let's dash down and get a couple. Oh, no, said the old bull. Let's stroll down and get the lot.
Charlie and another guard are examining the horse. Charlie wraps the sloping side panels with a clenched fist, then taps them with his fingertips. He inspects the padded top before moving on to the vertical end walls.
Oh!
His comrade tips it up and Charlie looks inside.
Good chicken game.
The other guard goes. Charlie walks to the corner of the inmates' games room where the horse is being stored, cranes his neck to make sure he's alone, then spits on his hands, takes a running jump and vaults the length of the horse, landing at the far end with a satisfied grin. Daytime in the games room. Peter takes the trowel and some S-hooks from a shallow cardboard box and puts them in a cloth bag. Keeping one hook back, he pulls a drawstring to seal the top of the bag, then crosses to the horse with the bag and the box.
Ready, John? All clear?
Yeah, okay.
Go, chaps.
The horse is tipped up on one end.
John?
All set, Pete?
John climbs inside the horse.
Blanket. Trowel and hooks. Box. Right?
Right.
The horse is set upright. To a lookout.
Victor?
All clear.
Okay, John?
Take it away.
Ready?
Lift.
Using the wooden beam slotted through the body of the horse, Peter, Phil, Robbie and another inmate carry it out of the games hall. With John secured inside, feet wedged against the wooden walls, they carry the horse across the compound. A tower guard watches with quiet amusement.
To me a little. Right. Down.
With the horse carefully positioned, the beams are removed. Peter gives it a few gentle shoves, but it stands firm.
All right, Phil, come on over the top.
He clears it easily.
All right.
It's easier, boy.
Two more go over.
Hold it, James. Okay, John. All right, chaps, go. Okay, next.
John's lit a candle.
Go on, then, over. Good one.
He lays out a cloth.
Dry top sand in the box.
He scoops with the trowel.
That's better. Improving, Phil.
The shirtless prisoners continue vaulting the width of the horse.
Now the wet undersand on the blanket.
Fine.
I never seen such a ropey lot. Okay, blokes? A good run and a good jump. It's all you want. Next. Good. Come on, next one. Good run. That's the stuff. Come on, Peter.
Peter claps Phil on the shoulder.
Feeling tired?
Not bad, but a bit more jumper, boy.
John's dug a sizable hole and stowed the dirt in the cloth bags which have been hung on hooks from the roof of the horse. He seals another bag and hangs it up.
Next. Over. Well done. That's good. That's really very good. It's much better.
John's placing planks of wood across the mouth of the shaft, a few inches below the surface.
Next.
As Peter lands, he leans over the end of the horse.
Time to pack up, John.
Right, half a minute.
John scrapes the hard sand from the blanket into the hole and onto the planks.
working on for a pal, Peter.
Mm-mm. He's filling in now.
Okay, next.
John pours the cardboard box of soft sand over the patch of ground and smooths it out with the palm of his hand.
Last run, chaps. Right, back up.
John pats the soft sand, then stows the trowel in his tool bag.
Nig? David?
Okay, John. All aboard.
John blows out the candle.
Okay, Peter. Okay, Robbie.
Wrong.
A little
high. Right. Okay, boys. Lift. Right.
With the beams once more slotted into place, the four officers carry the horse away, leaving only its imprint in the top sand. Later, Peter sneaks into the games hall with one of the bags.
All clear?
All clear.
Okay, James.
Peter lifts a floor panel and more bags are brought in. John jumps into the foundations and Peter joins him as bags of dirt are handed down. Later, a German is standing guard as the men shower.
We don't want to go to war. We'd rather stay at home and run the pubs to Rome and drink with the daughters of the high lord.
How's it going, John?
Piece of
cake, Bill.
We'll
be out before you are.
Paul catches the eye of the guard.
Meine Herren, nehmen Sie doch Vernunft an. Sie machen uns doch alle nur Ärger.
The guard glares at them.
Ich sage Ihnen das höflich und Sie wollen nicht anders. Entweder so oder so.
Having turned off the water, the guard grins.
So.
Point made, he turns it on again. Another day and Peter's digging while John and Phil loiter at the edge of no man's land.
What about here?
It's going a bit slow, John.
40 feet.
8 weeks? Not so good.
It's getting the sand back.
Chaps are getting pretty tired, you know?
I know, Phil. What's the answer?
Paul struggles wearily over the top of the horse.
Come on now, chaps. Nearly packing up time.
I'm going to check up with the duty pilot. Keep him going, Phil.
Okay, don't worry. Watch that leg, Nig.
It's okay.
Let's have a series, eh?
Nigel's limping.
Okay, chaps, let's get cracking.
The weary officers begin to vault once more, their feet landing heavily at the base of the horse. A hole opens up in the sand. Nigel spots it, jumps and contrives to land face down over the hole, feigning injury, under the watchful eye of a tower guard.
Phil! Phil!
I told you to watch that leg.
Rub it hard. Look!
Phil sees the hole.
Roof must have fallen in. Here, come this way a bit. Go on, rub it hard. Pretend I'm hurt.
Get John, quickly. Okay. Two of you, go for a stretcher.
John, quick, there's been a fall.
Who is it?
No, the tunnel.
Is he trapped?
We don't know. Nig's lying on the hole.
How do you feel? Okay, John, you take over.
John nips over to the horse.
Peter.
He fetches cigarettes from his jacket lying beside the horse.
I'm going down.
You can give the show away.
I know.
Peter.
A shaft of sunlight from the hole falls on Peter as he digs himself out from a pile of sand within the tunnel.
Peter, you all right?
A little mess. I'll try and clear it. Can you fill in from the top?
Okay.
Down here. And lift. Right, Paul, cover that side. You don't seem interested, old boy.
Bandages.
12 minutes, John.
Pete, 12 minutes to roll call. Yeah. Carry on jumping, chaps.
Okay. Come on, let's have a go long ways.
The guards are on parade beyond the main gate. Paul looks around worriedly. In the tunnel, Peter places a plank against the roof. On the tower, the guard peers through his binoculars as John makes a show of bandaging Nigel's leg.
We'll never do it.
The camp gates are opened and the guards march through. In the tunnel...
Pete, how are you doing? How's it going?
Peter props up the timber with another.
Okay, nearly finished.
He's wedged the timber between the floor and the plank propping up the roof. Above ground, John tears the end of the bandage in two in order to knot it above Nigel's knee. He looks around worriedly. Other prisoners are already assembling for roll call.
How much longer, Paul?
5.
5 minutes to go, Pete. Only 5.
Okay, short up. You fill in from the top.
Phil?
Yeah?
Give us a hand.
Okay.
John massages Nigel's leg, while Phil crouches down beside them. Between them, they smooth the loose sand into the small hole. In the tunnel, the source of daylight from above is slowly cut off. Paul shoots a look at the inmates assembling for roll call.
Left.
Just a minute, chaps.
David.
Okay, boy.
Take my shirt, Nick.
John whispers as Peter climbs back into the horse.
Beat the guards in.
Nigel's carried away on a stretcher, but John's looking worried.
Okay to go, John.
Do something, Phil.
What?
Do something.
Phil glances around, then clambers onto the roof of the horse and stands on its head. Inside, Peter's wearily replacing the shoring planks to block the tunnel shaft. An impatient guard marches over to the horse.
Yes, sir.
I got the shirt on the wrong way round. I'm sorry.
Loose!
A guard beckons impatiently and marches off towards the parade ground. John and a couple of comrades have returned with the lifting beams. Inside the horse, Peter hangs the soft sandbox on a hook. John slips one of the beams through the horse.
Pete, we've got to go now.
Take her away.
Lift!
The horse is carried back to the games hall.
Up.
The horse is tipped up. Peter tumbles out and collapses face down on the wooden floor. In the infirmary, the camp padre plays a record on a wind-up gramophone for ranks of inmates in hospital beds. Amongst them is Peter, who's lying on his back beneath the clean sheets, staring thoughtfully at the ceiling. The man in the bed behind his props himself up.
Hey, Sport. You know where I've been?
Gone soon.
Danzig. I got through the wire with another couple of Aussies from the North compound. I nearly made it. Just getting on a ship when a sentry potted me.
How long you were?
3 days. Copped a bullet in the shoulder. Cold in the head from sleeping in a ditch.
What's Danzig like?
There's no future for a joker there. Place is stiff with troops.
How'd you get there?
Jumped the Rattler. That's the way to get around. By train.
Why not as a passenger? A foreign worker?
Oh, they ask for your ISVAS. Identity card. You've got to get a permit to travel.
You could get through, you travel first.
They've got train checks you'd never get through.
Peter lifts his head from his pillow.
How could I get travel papers to copy?
One of the goons. Try Doby.
Hey, Doby. Here.
The German orderly, Doby, comes over and adjusts the Australian's bedclothes. The man slips something to Doby, who gives him something in return.
My friend would like to see travel passes for foreign workers.
I cannot. They shoot me.
The Aussie grabs his arm.
They shoot you for trading with us Kriegies, Doby. My friend's a witness.
You must not tell. Please, I have family.
We will, Doby. Report him now. Blackmail? You stick at nothing if you want to escape.
Doby snaps to attention as an officer approaches.
Was machen Sie denn hier? Zu Befehl, Herr Oberarzt, der Verband des Mannes musste gewechselt werden.
It's good.
Peter fixes the senior officer with a stare.
You have something to say?
Peter glances at Doby, who shakes his head.
How soon will I be out of here?
2 days.
The officer goes to Peter.
I'll bring it tomorrow.
The officer stops by the gramophone and smiles.
Beethoven. He's a good German.
Yeah, he's dead.
The officer's smile fades and he marches out. Days are crossed off a calendar for September 1943. As an inmate tickles ivories, Peter and Nigel are hiding dirt bags in the games hall roof.
Small one, is that all?
That's all.
John, sitting nearby, hunched over in exhaustion.
Come on, John.
In their bunk room.
You and Clinton are sharing cook duty. Clinton isn't here, so obviously you must get lunch.
Clinton's missed his turn every day this week, and I'm not going to do it again. It's a matter of principle.
Oh, wrap up.
So the whole mess must suffer for your principles. There's nothing wrong with my principles. It's Clinton's laziness.
I don't call it laziness to sweat in a tunnel for hours.
And just because he's digging a tunnel, it doesn't excuse him from all his mess duties. This tunnel's excuse for everything. It's not even as if they're getting anywhere.
I say, Clinton, look here. We're waiting for our lunch.
And I'm not going to get it.
Was it my turn? I'm sorry.
I say, look here, Howard.
Oh, shut up, you.
Look here, Howard. It's simply not good enough, you know. I suggest we split the mess into two in future. You and Clinton had better cater for yourselves.
John slumps onto his bed.
Okay, fair enough. What about you, Nick?
I'll join you two. Do you mind?
Peter sits beside John's bed and splits a cigarette with him.
How are you feeling?
I'll be okay in a minute. How many bags today, Pete?
5.
We've had it, Pete. We'll never get out at this rate.
We'll get out.
John puffs on his ciggy.
Only 5 bags a trip.
We could make 2 trips a day.
Wouldn't the goons be suspicious?
They think we're mad enough for anything. So even that would only mean 10 bags a day instead of 5. Less when we got further.
There must be a way. It isn't the digging. It's getting the sand from the face to the shaft. How about a sort of sledge?
That's it. We could both go down together.
The horse wouldn't carry 2.
Or is it wood?
And the sand.
Oh. Got it. We both go down in the morning, dig, fill the bags, and leave them in the shaft. In the afternoon, one of us goes out alone and brings the bags back.
Fine. Who's going to take charge on the surface?
Phil, he's practically doing that already.
He's taking him out of the camp with us, too.
Yes. We can't have him training around Germany with us. And what about Nig? Nig?
My leg puts me out. If we had to run for it, I'd be sunk. Go on and ask Phil.
Okay.
But we'll make it a condition he travels alone.
Later.
Got it?
Sure.
See you at 2:30 then.
Okay, Phil.
Busy, Phil?
Of course I'm busy. Starting on the pantomime, you know that?
Why not put it on in London?
Oh, yes. Drury Lane, I buy.
Phil?
Yeah?
Seriously, come in with us and we'll have you back with your wife by Christmas.
What's the catch?
No catch.
Why me?
Knowing your organizing ability.
And your almost touching belief in our efficiency.
Okay, Jeff, let's have it. What do you want me to do?
You see, Peter and I are both going down together. We'd like you to organize the vaulting.
may have escaped your memory, old boy, but I'm doing that already.
Then what are you arguing about?
I'm not arguing. I'm very flat. Okay. Okay, I'm in.
Good, Sean.
Peter.
Hmm?
There is one thing. If it's all the same to you. I'd rather travel alone. I prefer it that way. I feel I do better on my own.
We accept that condition.
A montage. A thumbs up from a lookout. Then Peter and John climb into the horse together. Peter hangs a candle on a hook on the wall of the tunnel and scoops dirt onto a metal bowl. He tugs on a piece of twine attached to the bowl, and John, who's further back along the cramped diggings, draws the bowl along the tunnel. Peter digs at the soft earth with the trowel, while John loads the dirt from the bowl into a cloth bag. A line is drawn through a whole week at the end of September, before the 26th is struck off the calendar. The wooden horse is being brought out of the games hall, then Peter crawling along the tunnel by candlelight. Images of the inmates vaulting athletically over the horse, superimposed over John digging in the tunnel, and Charlie driving a spike into the ground by a hut wall. The Get Fit Now poster is now faded and torn. A prisoner is standing by the games hall window playing a violin and keeping a lookout. Other inmates are stowing bags under the floorboards or passing them up to Nigel, who's up in the roof space. A truck carrying German troops speeds through the camp gates. Peter hears it coming and rushes outside, pulling on his tunic.
Bill!
Peter beckons to Bill, who hares across the compound to the washhouse just as the truck pulls up outside and the troops disembark. The prisoners quickly clear away the last of the bags in the games hall. Bill covers the hole in the floorboards with a loose panel. Nigel replaces a panel in the ceiling and remains in the roof space. Peter reaches the games hall, but is kept at bay by an armed guard as a second truck of troops arrives. The troops pile into the hall as the inmates pretend to rehearse around the piano with sheet music. The inmates put up minimal resistance as the troops unceremoniously bundle them out. The last of the reluctant officers is dragged away from the piano and pushed outside. Paul shoved down the hall and steps into Peter's arms. As the troops conduct a search, John joins Peter outside. They nonchalantly stroll away.
Where's Nigel?
Up in the roof.
On his hands and knees.
If they spot the sound, they're bound to connect it with the horse.
Inside, the troops are banging their rifle butts against the floorboards and stamping their feet. A makeshift armchair is thrown outside. Then the wooden horse is brought to the door and kicked out into the dirt.
Maybe we've had it, Peter.
Oh, well, it was a lousy tunnel anyway.
Outside the wash house.
Open my house for bus hose!
A soldier beckons to the troops in the games hall. They emerge from the hall en masse, rush across the compound and head into the washhouse. John and Peter join a semicircle of inmates watching the activity from outside. John looks up and nudges Peter. Nigel's giving them a thumbs up from the louvre window in the roof space. Bill emerges from the washhouse looking disappointed.
They get yours?
Yep.
Bad one.
Yours okay?
So far.
Oh, that's one thing anyway. We've got about 3 tons of sand in that roof.
The locker room ceiling at the washhouse collapses, covering the troops with dirt. A montage. October 15th is struck off the calendar. Perspiration on Peter's brow as he digs in the tunnel. The heel of a hobnailed boot is levered off, revealing a folded wad of cash inside. A route is drawn from a wall map with tracing paper. Clothes are removed from a hidden wall panel, and materials cut and sewn to make civilian outfits. Now Robbie's testing John over the contents of forged ID papers bearing his picture.
Name?
Michel Condé.
Born?
Lille.
Date?
29th of September 1920.
Nationality?
French.
Profession?
Draftsman.
Destination?
Lübeck.
Have you got your police permit to travel?
Yes.
Who are you employed by?
Metallehutenwerker, Dr. Hoffmann Gesellschaft.
Very good, that's all.
Coffee's ready, John.
They prepare to dye some long underwear. Peter, in civvies.
Well, how do I look?
Well...
All right, don't say it.
Come on, Pete, your turn.
Now, don't forget, Pete. Ich bin Ausländer, nicht verstehen. I'm a foreigner, I don't understand.
Peter hands his papers to Robbie.
Name?
Marcel Leverser.
Born?
Paris.
Nationality?
French.
Wie heißt die zweite Schwester ihrer Mutter?
Peter looks puzzled.
Oh, ich bin Ausländer, nicht verstehen.
Nor will anybody else who pronounce it like that.
Phil comes in.
Well, how do I look? Commercial traveller, German style.
Very good.
Are you proposing to take those through the tunnel?
Well, these are my samples.
What, no cabin truck?
Well, I'm a commercial traveller. I've got to have my samples, haven't I? These serve a dual purpose.
What are they?
Margarine. I can eat them if I get hungry. Well, how are the combis getting along? I don't fancy having those next to my tender skin. They smell revolting.
Yes, well, I think something's gone peculiar in the dye.
Peculiar is an understatement.
Here's your special rations. Dog food, we call this. Mixed with water, it turns into porridge, sort of. Chocolate, raisins, and a couple of torches.
Thank you.
Could we see the group captain for a moment? Yes, come along now. He's got some money for you. Clothes look pretty good.
David?
The senior officer's quarters.
Howard and Clinton, sir.
All right, gather round.
Good evening, sir.
He invites them to sit.
Trying to keep your voices low. It's the yellow hour tomorrow, eh? What time do you break?
6 o'clock in the evening, so the train goes at 12:30.
And what's your plan?
Thoreau's going on his own to Danzig. John and I are going quite openly by train to Lübeck. If we don't get a ship at once, we'll stay in a hotel until we do.
It's worth trying. Here's your money. 120 marks each. Sorry, but I'm afraid we can't afford any more.
Thank you. There's one thing, sir. Would you stand in at roll call tomorrow afternoon?
Stand in? What for?
Well, there are three of us breaking. And we need one chap to seal the trap down after us. That makes four. Well, the horse won't carry more than three at a time. That means two trips. And one of us being sealed down to wait for the rest.
Not very pleasant. The air's going to get pretty foul. Who's going to be sealed down?
No, I will.
I'm going to... Now, look, I can get on with the digging meantime.
Second hand.
I mean, a really great lark like you was going to use up more air than I was.
It was my idea.
Well, there's one way of settling this. Whoever gets the longest match goes first.
Peter and John each take one end of a split match from the group captain's fist. John gets the longest.
Me. Good, it means I'll be first out of the tunnel, too.
He grins. The following day, now the prisoners are taking it in turns to vault the length of the horse. Concealed inside, Peter's sitting in a corner as John stands in the shaft, bringing up bags of dirt. Peter passes the elements of their escape kit to his comrade.
Yours? Mine? Phil's.
Pretty hot down here.
Take it easy. Don't overdo it. Don't want to have to carry a lot.
I'll be okay. So long.
Good luck.
John disappears into the depths of the hole. Peter covers the shaft with the planks, then weighs them down with bags of dirt. In the tunnel, John unhooks the lit candle from the tunnel wall, then hesitates as Peter taps down the dirt bags. John heads off down the tunnel, with only the flickering light of the small candle to illuminate the darkness. Now, Peter's pacing the floor of the bunkroom, hands thrust into his pockets. He spots a solitary mug on the mess table, then distractedly upends it. He takes his documents out of his trouser pocket, then stows them away as Pomfret arrives.
Oh, Howard. Got a bit of German money here. Might come in handy.
Thanks.
Peter takes it and leaves. Pomfret stares after him. Then a faint smile appears on his lips. John breathing heavily in the tunnel. The commandant marches across the indentations left by the wooden horse in the sand to join another officer and the British adjutant at roll call. The group captain's on parade beside Peter.
Parade dismissed!
The men disperse.
Thank you, sir.
Later, in the games hall.
Stand by.
Phil.
Ready?
Up.
So long.
Four. So long, Meg. Oh, Pete.
Cold tea for John.
Thanks, sir. Good luck. All right, down.
Nigel gave Peter a bottle. Inside the horse.
Okay.
Horse head.
Now, careful now. All right, lift.
Watch it.
Now, lifting the weight of the three men hidden within the shell, the party carrying the horse stumble on the short flight of steps leading down to the compound. Paul, Peter and Phil brace each other. The lifting party go on their way. Now, with the horse in its regular spot, Peter's standing in the open shaft. To Phil.
That's the whole of your thing. Okay?
Right. Blimey.
Bill eases himself down into the shaft and Paul leans over the mouth.
Good luck, Phil. See you after the war.
Right.
Phil disappears into the shaft and Paul replaces the wooden timbers over the mouth. With the aid of a torch, Phil glances around the tunnel walls, then spots Peter crawling ahead of him. Bill smiles excitedly and sets off after his comrade, moving through the gloom. His torch beam illuminates the walls of the triangle-shaped tunnel as he crawls along on his knees and elbows. Up ahead, Peter makes rapid progress along the tunnel. A frown is creasing his brow as he reaches a wall of sand blocking the way.
John. John!
Behind him, Phil looks worried as Peter starts clawing at the sand. Phil nervously wipes his mouth. Peter scoops fistfuls of soft sand out of the way. Then John begins to feebly draw sand from his side of the wall.
Where the hell have you been?
Journey about 4:30.
Is that all? I thought something had gone wrong. I had to go out alone.
Present from Nick.
Thanks.
Peter hands over the bottle. John uncorks it and takes a swig.
How bad's the fall?
It's not a fall.
Thank God for that.
It's the sand I pushed behind me. I'm working towards the surface now.
How far have you got?
About a couple of feet.
Drink a bit, old boy. We haven't much time.
Peter pulls himself through a narrow gap. Nigel's beside the horse in the compound.
All right, lift.
He supervises the lifting party bearing away the horse, then glances at the patch of ground where it stood, before following them. Night's falling. The lights mounted above the barbed wire perimeter fence go on. A tower guard swivels a spotlight, illuminating another goon barricading a hut. The dog handler sets his German shepherd loose. In the bunkroom, Peter and John's brother officers are assembled around their mess table, tense with anticipation. Two of the guards are walking towards each other beside no man's land. In the tunnel, John's digging upwards through the earth. On the surface, the guards loiter. Underground, John pushes the trowel up through the earth, then turns to Peter with a grin.
Only a thin crust left. Right. Hold it.
To Phil.
John's bag. Mine.
Phil ties them to Peter's ankle.
Stand by.
Peter. Good luck, Pete. See you in Sweden.
Good luck, Phil.
Peter moves on. Phil smiles, then crawls after him with his own bundle of gear. Up ahead.
Ready. Wait.
Peter checked his watch. They wait and listen as a guard paces across the ground above. With frowns etched on their grimy faces, the trio wait patiently as the footsteps of the guard move away. John gives Peter a quizzical look. Peter checks his watch once more, then covers his face with the knitted balaclava. John and the eager Phil do likewise. In the bunk room, their comrades stand poised with a selection of metal dishes and kitchen implements. The second hand of Peter's watch is counting down the moments to 6 p.m.
5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Now!
John digs urgently at the earth above as the dorm erupts into a staged cacophony of noise.
Start to move!
As the guards turn their attention towards the racket, the inmates are banging bowls and bashing stools against the floorboards. The trowel is poking out through the foliage on the other side of the perimeter fence. John's bundle is pushed out through the hole, followed by his arm, then his head.
I'm out!
John pauses until the coast is clear, then clambers out of the hole and scuttles away. Peter emerges from the hole. He pauses to look back towards the darkened camp, then follows John to a clump of trees. Peter lifts up his balaclava and watches Phil pull himself free of the hole. Keeping low, Phil sets off in another direction. John claps Peter on the shoulder.
Come on, let's get going.
Clutching their bundles, Peter and John run through the countryside. They're still looking about warily as they enter a clearing. Then they straighten up and slow to a more casual pace. John comes to a stop, covers his mouth, and doubles over in laughter.
Don't see nothing.
You...
You look like a really great bear.
Don't look so good yourself. Come on, let's get cleaned up.
They don their camp-made civvies, featuring workmen's caps and long overcoats. They enter the booking hall of a railway station, populated with civilians and German soldiers. John joins the queue for the ticket office, and a German officer pushes past him without a second thought. Peter heads across the hall towards an expansive, wall-mounted timetable. He takes out a notebook and pencil while keeping an eye on John. Peter reaches the front of the queue.
Zwei Karten für den alten Lübeck, bitte.
Ausweis, bitte.
Ja.
John hands his ID to a blonde-haired ticket clerk.
Haben Sie eine polizeiliche Reiseerlaubnis?
Ja. He presents his travel permit.
Ach, Sie sind Franzose. Fahren Sie in Urlaub?
Sie beeilen Sie sich. Ich habe nicht die ganze Nacht Zeit. Eine Rückfahrkarte, dritter nach Frankfurt, bitte.
Thanks, John.
The man in the queue behind John impatiently tried to push him aside as the clerk handed over the tickets. As he walks away from the ticket window, John hesitates as a German soldier stops to light a cigarette. The soldier moves on, and John rejoins Peter. John hands a ticket to Peter and they hurry outside. They give their tickets to a collector at a booth on the platform who clips them before giving them back. The two fugitives board an already moving train as it pulls out of the station. A platform guard slams the door behind them and the train carriages are wreathed in steam as the locomotive picks up speed. Morning roll call back at Stalagluft 3.
Attention!
The adjutant swaps salutes with the commandant who addresses the inmates.
The following penalties have been imposed. 1. The weekly hot shower will be stopped. 2. Access to the camp theater will be denied. And all form of gymnastic apparatus will be denied.
David punches the air in triumph as the horse is carried away.
Der auf Bahnsteig 1 einlaufende Eisluft kommt aus Berlin. Weiterfahrt nach Hamburg 9:10.
The train is pulled into Lübeck station. A platform guard steps forward to open a carriage door, allowing people to get off. Military and civilian personnel alight and head towards the exits as Peter and John cautiously emerge.
Achtung! Hauptmann Brickler möchte sich sofort bei der Bahnhofskommandantur melden.
We can't stand around here.
Let's keep with the crowd.
They follow their fellow passengers to steps leading to an upper concourse. Now they're entering a busy restaurant. They make their way to a vacant table and sit down. Peter spreads a German newspaper in front of him and they exchange rueful looks as John makes a show of nursing an empty beer glass. From the station's public address system.
Achtung! Wir auf Bahnsteig 1, Peter Alzo, fährt nach Hamburg über Ludwigslust Büchen.
Peter offers John a cigarette, then lights it with a match for him. Peter lights his own and the two men take a puff, blowing out plumes of grey smoke. John shoots a quizzical look towards the bar. There seems to be no sign of a waiter. Peter takes out his pencil, jots a note on the edge of the newspaper, then shows it to John. It says, "It's a help yourself." John takes in the message written above a comic strip, then gets up and with his cigarette hanging from his lips, heads towards the serving counter. Peter hides himself behind the newspaper. Now the two men are looking more relaxed as they stroll across a bridge overlooking a river. They glance at a pair of German sailors sharing a smoke nearby. With John clutching a leather satchel, and Peter carrying a small black valise, the escaped prisoners of war cross a wooden bridge leading to a dockside, where a ship is moored.
This is more like it. Look. Gosh, she's Swedish. We must get in touch with the crew. We'll come back tonight and climb into the docks.
I don't like that. Better contact them ashore. It's sticking our necks out to climb in.
We wouldn't be here if we hadn't stuck our necks out. Far better to meet them in the ship than out here surrounded by goons. We'll climb in tonight.
That's your right. We'd better move on. It isn't safe to hang around here.
Night. A German soldier's patrolling outside the docks, covering the area between a perimeter fence and a line of goods wagons on a dockyard railway line. John and Peter are hiding beneath one of the wagons. As the guard moves away, Peter emerges and approaches the chain-link fence. Peter climbs onto the fence and looks for the guard. The guard has stopped at the end of the fence. Peter looks at John, who urges him on with a gesture. Peter swings a leg over the barbed wire at the top of the fence and drops down onto the other side as John starts to climb. The guard stamping his feet against the cold and shouldering his rifle as John joins Peter. Together, they duck under a covered wagon and hurry away. As they reach the dockside, Peter's face falls.
This is it. She's gone. Sure is the right dock.
Peter checks with his torch.
Halt! He's seen us.
Two points of light are quickly heading their way. They run down the side of a brick railway shed and take cover in an arched alcove. The duo press themselves up against the alcove wall as the guards make a cursory search by torch beam before moving on.
Okay.
Peter and John set off.
Halt! Wer da?
Discovered, they break into a run and round a corner as the guards give chase. The fugitives race across the dockyard, then attempt to evade their pursuers by running between a pair of tracks occupied by stationary goods wagons. They take cover beneath one of the wagons. The guards walk briskly past a large stone building, then stop just beside Peter and John's hiding place.
Verstehen Sie besser den Wachposten, bevor Sie entkommen.
The guards walk away. After a moment, John and Peter share a look of relief.
Back to the fence.
They quickly scale the perimeter fence together. Now they're walking through a residential area of the city. They stop and John leans wearily against a picket fence. Peter gives John a nudge. A policeman is checking the gates of the properties in the cobbled street. The policeman affords them a suspicious glance as they walk past. John and Peter round a street corner, then stop. Peter peeps back the way they came.
He's following. Can't hear good.
They run up an alley and the policeman quickens his pace. John and Peter reach a dead end.
Blind alley. Through the gate. Look as if we're going into the house.
They head through the garden gate and John checks on the law.
Coming down the alley.
John nudges a bin lid.
Quick, over here.
Alerted, the policeman heads in their direction. John and Peter shin up a sheer wall and climb onto a sloping roof, hiding them from the street. A light goes on in the upper window of one of the houses, and two silhouettes appear on the curtains. The policeman watches the domestic squabble for a moment. Then, apparently satisfied, he walks away. Now, Peter and John are dividing some rations in a shed.
No, the object of this exercise is to get to Sweden, not a bullet in the back. No more climbing into docks.
We got eyes all right. We'll try again tomorrow.
Now, look here, John. We spent 4.5 months getting as far as this. Don't let's rush our fences. The old bull was right, you know. We can't get to the Swedes. All right, let them come to us.
How?
Find the pubs they go to when they're ashore.
And where do we live in the meanwhile? There's nothing here, no water, we can't even get a shave.
When we left the camp, we had a plan to travel by train and stay in hotels. We haven't stuck to it. If we're going to find the Swedes, we must have a base.
Okay.
Day. Despondent troops in ragged footwear and furry hats being marched along a street by a German escort as Peter loiters on the pavement. John affords the men a puzzled look as he emerges from a hotel.
Russians, I think. Any luck?
No, full up. All I get is full up. Perhaps foreign workers aren't allowed in hotels, I don't know.
Ask one of these Frenchmen. They're not guarded.
It's dangerous to talk to anyone.
Go on, ask one. Here, ask this one.
Suppose he tries to give us away.
Wait till he's down the alley and get him on his own.
All right. You keep an eye on him from behind.
I'll look out for him if he turns nasty.
Peter lurks nearby, and John accosts the worker as he stops to pick up a dog end. After a brief conversation, John smiles, and the two men shake hands.
Bonne chance. Salut.
Merci.
Sheriff.
I think he guessed who we are. He gave me the name of the hotel and said, don't stay more than 2 days. They send your papers to the police.
Which way?
Now they're filling in a registration form for the proprietor in the hotel reception.
Danke. Wollen Sie bitte im Voraus bezahlen? 11 Mark, bitte. Ich muss Sie suchen, im Voraus zu bezahlen. 11 Mark, bitte.
Entschuldigen Sie, bitte.
John takes out a wallet and hands some cash to the rotund, balding cigar smoker.
Danke. Nummer 7, bitte.
Danke schön.
In their room, Peter lies on the bed while John washes up.
There you are. Just a little persistence, that's all that's needed. We've got our base, now we can take it easy and stick to the plan. As soon as we've got cleaned up, we'll talk to a few more Frenchmen and find out where...
Don't ask the matter.
Can't you lay off it for 5 minutes?
Good.
It's all very well for you. You don't have to do the talking. All you have to do is to stand around like a half-wit.
Well, I'd do the talking if I could.
Now listen, chum, I'm tired and I'm hungry and I'm not going to tackle one single Frenchman until...
Peter sits up as someone approaches their room. Peter nods to John, who opens the door.
Bedauere, Sie haben auf dem Eintragungsformular hier den Grund Ihres Aufenthalts in Lübeck nicht angegeben.
Hier ist ein Zeichner. Man hat einen hier geschickt für einige Tage, zum Arbeiten in der Lübecker Geschäft von unserer Firma.
So, danke.
The proprietor goes.
He wants to know why we've come to Lübeck. I tell him we've come to work.
And we can't stay here during the day, it'd look too fishy.
We can tell him we've been travelling all last night. Gosh, I feel tired, Pete.
Piece of chocolate?
Thanks.
Peter lies down again.
Sorry I tore the roof down just now. You are a bit of a bind, you know.
Okay, I know.
Night. Peter and John walk up a street and stop near a bar to eavesdrop on two men.
Eh ben, c'est pas tous les soirs comme ça. Non, ce qu'il faut, hein? Non, t'as raison. Eh ben, dis donc, qu'est-ce qu'on fait? Tu viens boire un verre?
He's going to a cafe for a drink. Shall I stop him? Find out where the Swedes go drinking.
The men split up, and one walks past John and Peter's hiding place.
Pardon, monsieur. Avez-vous du feu?
Oui, bien sûr.
Pouvez-vous nous mettre en rapport avec des marins suédois?
Quoi?
Où vont-ils quand ils débarquent?
Tell him what we are.
Nous sommes des prisonniers anglais.
Vraiment?
Pouvez-vous nous donner un coup de main?
The wild-haired man shakes John's hand and all three go off together.
À la claire fontaine,
a man in a leather jacket frowns in concentration as he fingerpicks and sings to a folk guitar. He stops abruptly as John and Peter arrive with their new contact.
You are in a camp of French workers. Stay here.
The man leaves them with the French workers, who regard the escapees with suspicion. Some are sitting on bunks, two are playing draughts.
Just like home, isn't it? Don't think they like the look of it.
Come, please.
The man takes Peter out, but the doors close by another standing guard before John can follow. Peter's led along a corridor to another room. As Peter enters the room, the door is closed behind him and another man stands guard. Peter approaches a table where three men are talking urgently. The middleman, André, looks up.
Vous ne parlez pas français? You do not speak French?
No.
You know what will happen if we find you're not British.
I am British.
You'll be found floating in the dock. Who are you?
Peter Hard. I'm a British officer.
You must have proof of that.
My identity is?
I regret that is not sufficient. Your age?
34.
Soldier?
No, airman.
Frank.
Fly 5 tone.
What camp were you in?
Stellar Globe 3.
What squadron?
I'm sorry, I can't tell you that.
Of course. But I must have proof of your identity.
I understand that.
When did you escape?
Last Friday.
When were you captured?
December the 17th, 1942.
You were shot down?
Yes.
Where?
North of Osnabrück.
What aircraft were you flying?
I can't answer that.
Andre ponders.
Were you wounded?
Yes.
Show me.
Peter unbuttons his coat.
No, don't show me. You look tired.
2 years is a long time to be in a prison camp.
I was only there 1 year.
Yes, of course. What are your mother's Christian names?
Mary Elizabeth.
What does your father call her?
Betty.
You have a garden?
Yes.
What flowers grow in it?
Lupins, sweet peas, geraniums.
You have a car?
Yes.
What make?
Morris.
Horsepower?
10.
You know London?
Fairly well.
What is the name of the statue in Piccadilly Circus?
Heroes.
What is it famous for?
Its flower sellers.
Good. Now one thing more.
Pierre.
What the devil?
I'm sorry. You're British, all right. You will understand we have to be careful.
Right.
He slapped Peter's face.
We cannot promise you much help, but we will pass the word that you are in Lübeck. And in the meantime, you must continue on your own and wait for us to get in touch with you.
He lights a cigarette for Peter.
Thanks.
Morning. A woman is sweeping the pavement outside the hotel entrance. Peter wakes with a start and looks across to John's bed. It's empty. Peter springs out of bed while fastening his trousers. He goes outside onto the landing overlooking the reception and sees a policeman with the proprietor.
Hallo. Wie viele Gäste haben Sie hier im Hotel?
Ungefähr 16.
Na, zeigen Sie mir mal Ihr Buch.
Schön.
Und die Anmeldung.
The policeman's checking the hotel register. Peter hurries back to his room and looks out from the balcony. John is walking back to the hotel in the street below. Peter dons his scarf and jacket.
Jensen, Levasseur, wer ist das?
John spots the policeman as soon as he enters the lobby. Both the proprietor and the officer are examining paperwork and have their backs to the door as John creeps up the stairs. He hurries back to the room, where Peter's already packing his valise.
Pete, there's a policeman downstairs.
I know that. Where the devil have you been?
To the docks.
What for?
Have a look round.
Then you're a fool. Suppose you'd been caught, I wouldn't have known where you were.
I left her a note.
That's a darn fool thing to do for a start. Suppose the proprietor had come.
Listen, you're always telling me to speak to the French. I went alone because I thought there was a better chance about you hanging around in the background.
And did my absence improve your luck?
No.
They exchange nervous glances. Then John opens the door to the proprietor.
Wünschen Sie Ihr Zimmer noch länger zu behalten?
Nein, wir reisen jetzt ab.
Ah, danke schön.
Danke.
What do you want?
No, we're leaving.
You can say that again.
Listen, Pete, we've been in Lübeck 4 days. We spent nearly all our money and our food's gone. I don't think there's a single Swede in the town. The French are no good.
So what, John?
Lübeck's a dead loss. Let's cut and make for Danzig.
How do we know that Danzig will be any better?
Couldn't be any worse.
Okay. We'll give it one more chance. If we don't strike oil by tonight, we'll jump a train and get out. Okay?
Okay.
The policeman is packing up his paperwork as John and Peter head downstairs to the lobby. John leaves the key on the proprietor's desk without a word. The little man gives them a curious look as they go, and the policeman stares after them.
Ist das die beiden Franzosen?
Jawohl.
Outside, the fugitives walk briskly across the street, passing a man in a fedora hat and trench coat. He's leaning against a corner, smoking a cigarette and pretending to read a newspaper. The man folds up his paper, discards his ciggy, and follows them around a corner.
John, there's someone on our tail.
Sure?
Think so. Better test it. In here, buy a box of matches.
They step into a tobacconist's.
Eine Schachtel Streichhölzer, bitte.
Bitte schön.
Dankeschön.
Danke sehr.
The shopkeeper slips John's coin into a till drawer as the duo leave with their purchase. The man is lounging against a wall as they walk back the way they came.
Is he still with us?
Mm-mm. Look, at the next corner we're split. He can't follow both of us. Meet at the Café Accordion.
Right.
At the corner, John walks straight on while Peter takes a left. The follower stops briefly at the corner, then sets off after Peter. Puffing on his pipe, Peter runs up a flight of steps, then ducks into an alleyway and conceals himself around a corner at the end. The follower walks past the mouth of the alley and Peter moves on, crossing a large square bustling with people. The follower walks under an arch and is silhouetted against a shaft of sunlight as Peter walks in his direction. Peter stops dead as their eyes meet. He hurries off in another direction while his nemesis gives chase. Now, Peter's pushing his way through a crowd of workers streaming from a factory. He runs down a gangplank as a small ferry boat's pulling away from a jetty and hops aboard, eluding his pursuer. Peter arrives at the Café Rendezvous, where a bespectacled accordionist is playing. John puts down a half-finished glass of beer and slides it across the table to Peter, who drinks gratefully.
Did you lose him?
I think so. We don't wait for tonight. Let's get out right away.
To Danzig?
Mm.
Good.
Do you want this?
Drink up.
John puffs on a cigarette and Peter empties the glass as Andre arrives with another man.
Been looking for you everywhere. This is Sigmund, the Dane. We'll smuggle you on board his ship.
Fine. Where's he sailing for?
Denmark.
But Denmark's occupied.
Mm-hmm. At least it's out of Germany.
But getting caught there is no better than getting caught here. Besides, we've no Danish papers or money. What happens when we get to Denmark?
What we'll do when we come to Denmark is that we go to Sweden. Here in Germany is not so easy. But people go from Denmark to Sweden all the time.
Okay. Thanks.
The man who was following them comes in.
He's just come in.
Peter and John rise to face him.
Hello, François. L'appelle que j'ai trouvé moi-même. This is François. We've had him on your tail for 2 days.
Haven't we met somewhere?
Enchanté, monsieur.
François shakes Peter's hand. In the crew room of a steamship.
Hansen
turns away from a porthole.
T'es comme nous. Oh, t'es une fille.
T'es une fille. Welcome, you boys. You okay now? See, I'm Hansen. I'm the boss around here. I fix all things. You have a drink?
Yeah, thank you.
Hansen hands Peter a bottle.
Thanks. Score.
Score.
Peter and John take a swig.
Let's go.
Go, go.
A plate of fried bacon and eggs is placed on the crew room table.
Are you boys hungry? Hey, I fix it. Please.
Just can I come and boot you? Where's the my tea, Hans?
Send the boat, send the boat. Send the boat, you see, the Germans is coming now to share the ship. I will have to put you down in the bilge. Please. Bring your sandwich with you.
Hansen opens a hatch beside the crew table. Peter and John climb down a ladder into the bilges with a couple of hastily made bacon and egg sandwiches.
Here's some blanket, boys. You'll be here for some hours, you know. They will drop the pilot and the guard. Take care for the anchor chain. Bye-bye, boys. I fix them.
Hansen closes the hatch, and the duo settle down on their blankets beside an enormous anchor chain.
There's cold down here, Pete.
Don't go much on the Atlas, yeah?
You've been a good sailor.
Personally, I was troubled by air.
Hansen's buttering up German soldiers with booze and eggs.
Nehmen Sie das mit für Ihren Frauen. Ich weiß ja,
dass sie haben nicht zu viel in Deutschland zu essen.
The German's patrol dog is polishing off the contents of a plate near the crew table. Sigmund gives Hansen a warning look.
Ihr werdet sehen, dass in diesem Schiff nicht fint ist. Keine Jude und keine Kontrabande. Skål!
Prost!
Hansen and the soldiers knock back their drinks.
Danke sehr.
One of the soldiers calls the dog, and Hansen shows the patrol off the boat, pausing only to give Sigmund a wink and a nod. Night. Peter's dozing. He's wrapped in a blanket, leaning against the ladder, clinging tightly to the rungs. John noticed that the engine stopped.
Must be dropping the pilot now.
I couldn't care less.
They keep clear of the anchor chain as it's drawn up through the ceiling, then listen to the sounds from outside. The bilge hatch opens.
All okay, boys. You can come up now. You not feel so good?
Not exactly.
Oh, it's worse later.
But you can lay your bunk till we come to Copenhagen.
How long before we get to Copenhagen?
About 2 days.
Peter wearily climbs up the ladder. Now the ship's gliding across the sea, smoke pouring from a funnel. The captain sets the engine controls to stop, then emerges from the bridge and looks over the side. John stirs in his bunk and sits up. Peter's smoking in the top bunk beside a porthole.
You awake, Pete?
Mm-hmm. All ready for roll call. Engines have stopped.
Must be getting near Copenhagen.
Can't see any land.
There's a fishing boat. Seems to be coming our way.
Sigmund.
You must get up. You have to leave the ship. The radio has been sent to the captain.
They quickly dress.
The Germans are waiting to arrest me in Copenhagen and the ship will be searched. Be taken off in a small fishing boat.
Come here. Lad os gå ikke tid til snak. Se at komme ud.
Hansen leads them quickly across the deck to the port side of the ship. He looks out across the ocean as a small boat motors towards the ship. Hansen turns away to pick up a coiled rope ladder, then drops it over the side. As the boat draws alongside the ship, the captain scans the skies with binoculars, then calls to John and Peter's cheery host.
Hansen! Gunther!
Having shaken hands with Hansen, John climbs over the side and starts down the rope ladder. Peter warmly shakes Hansen's hand and follows, joining Sigmund in the small fishing boat below. The captain of the ship watches with concern as the little boat chugs away. Hansen and the captain give the fugitives a wave. It's a bright sunny morning as the fishing boat motors into a bay. On a clifftop beside a church overlooking the sea, a man in a peaked cap keeping watch taps at his pipe as the boat comes to a stop at the stony shoreline. Sigmund, Peter and John clamber over the pale rocks at the bottom of the cliff, then head up a coastal path to the top, where the watchman's waiting with three bicycles. Greeting the man with handshakes, the trio ride off on the bikes. Now, they're cycling along a narrow dirt road flanked by telegraph poles and open countryside. An aerial view of busy Copenhagen. Peter and John follow Sigmund as he coasts to a halt outside a residential building. They dismount and look around warily before going inside, where Sigmund rings the bell of flat six. A slender woman with blonde hair looks through a spy hole and hesitates before opening the door.
Good day, Kammer. Will they come in?
Her eyes widen worriedly, then she lets the fugitives in and shuts the door. Kammer smiles as Sigmund wraps his arms around her waist and kisses her fondly on the cheek.
Det er to engelske krigsfanger. Det er unnsluppet av tysk fangeleie. Og du må gemme de her inntil vi kan få de over til Sverige.
Im Institut, Ludwig.
Wir können ein paar Tage kommen. This is my sister, John.
Where?
Peter.
How do you do?
I leave you with her while I make the arrangement, but you must not leave the flat before I return.
How long will it be?
Not long, but you are quite safe if you remain quiet. Understand?
Thank you, Sigmund.
Thanks a lot.
He shakes hands with John and Peter, pats camera on the cheek, then goes.
It's very kind of you to have us here.
Can he tell Ings?
Kid's scared to death. Can't be much fun for her to have us parked on it.
She takes a seat in an armchair beside the fireplace in her smartly furnished living room. She smiles faintly at Peter as the escapees sink into a couple of chairs. Later, all three are sitting at a dining table. Kammer pours half a beer bottle into a glass and hands it to John, then gives the remainder to Peter in another glass.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. For dance, skål.
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 She puts a tray on the table and starts to clear away dirty plates and cutlery. Peter and John obligingly hand over their own plates and she smiles gratefully. Peter gallantly holds open the dining room door for her as she heads for the kitchen. He gives her a warm smile, then lingers in the doorway watching her. He looks away and leans thoughtfully against the doorframe as John lights himself a cigarette.
We knew what they were doing. It's this business of relying on other people.
I don't like it either, but we've got to trust them.
Kammer looks alarmed. Peter and John hurry to the window and peep out through gaps in Kammer's curtains.
What is it?
Fire engine or police car?
Go back for window.
Kammer closes the gaps, then all three turn to the door at a sound from outside. She unlocks the door to let Sigmund in, and they have a brief, whispered conversation.
We must leave Copenhagen. The Germans are after me.
What do we do then?
We go to a little fishing village outside Copenhagen. We must go now at once.
I mean, Sigmund, du må videre.
Sigmund, would you please tell our sister we think she's very brave?
Det siger du er meget modig, Kammer.
Sig, jeg er ikke spor modig. Jeg har været angst hele tiden, men jeg er glad, hvis jeg har hjulpet dem lidt.
She thanks you, and she says she's not brave, but she's glad to help you. And she's frightened all the time.
You tell her she's not the only one.
Så ikke den eneste, Kammer. We must go now.
Thanks, Kammer, for all you've done.
She watches them go, then looks thoughtful. Night. Peter and John are hiding amongst boats on dry land in a maintenance yard as Sigmund rejoins them.
I cannot find the sentry. I go to the quayside and fix the boat. You stay here and guard the end of the quay till I'm ready.
Sigmund sets off. At a jetty, he unties the moorings of a small wooden boat. John emerges from the hiding place, runs across the yard to the next boat and takes cover behind the rudder. They peep out as a patrolling German soldier appears at the end of the Isle of Boats. Peter signals to John as the soldier loiters at the end of the aisle. The soldier starts walking in their direction. John emerges from behind the rudder, clutching his side and feigning injury.
Hilfe! Hilfe!
Wer da?
John stumbles against the boat hull, then collapses face down on the ground. With his rifle raised, the soldier cautiously approaches John's form. Peter creeps up behind the soldier and attacks. John springs into action, wrapping his arms around the man's ankles. John is momentarily stunned as the soldier lashes out. The man drops his weapon as Peter struggles with him. The soldier attempts to wriggle out of Peter's grip and reaches for his rifle, but Peter silences him with a single blow. The man stops moving and Peter's instantly remorseful. He straightens up, staring at his fallen enemy. On the boat, Sigmund checks his watch.
Come on.
John gently touches Peter's arm and leads him towards the boat. The duo climb over the side of the quay and board the little vessel. Peter's lost in thought as Sigmund makes final departure preparations.
Okay?
Yes, okay.
With Sigmund in the wheelhouse and smoke puffing from a small funnel, the little boat glides into the night across the placid water towards the sea. Göteborg, Sweden. Day. In a well-to-do restaurant, a smartly dressed man's inspecting food laid out on a buffet table while nodding pleasantly to the clientele. A smiling party vacate their table and leave. Peter and John arrive, smartly turned out in suits and well-groomed. They're pursued by a fellow with a moustache.
I say, you simply can't go on like this. It's the smartest place in Göteborg.
Like what?
Always going up and down in the lift.
I've always wanted to drive a lift.
Telephone. Hello, you speak English?
Oh, do stop it. The Swedes don't like this sort of thing. The consul will be furious.
Well, why not ask him along to lunch with us?
I don't think that'd be a great success. And I'm afraid I can't lunch with you either.
Oh, dear. In that case, could we have a little money?
Oh, yes. Now, money and coupons and three courses only, mind. And do go easy. Sweden's so frightfully expensive.
Oh, is it?
Oh,
thank
really?
You so much.
Thanks.
Where would you like to sit,
Joe? Right by the band.
As the maitre d' leads them to a table, they admire the buffet of sumptuous dishes. Peter steals a carnation from a vase and puts it in the buttonhole of his jacket. As they take their seats, John sees a familiar figure with a woman at a nearby table.
Phil! Would you excuse me one moment?
Certainly.
My dear Howard!
Phil, you are Vernon. How's the margarine?
All gone.
Phil, good to see you again. How are you?
Come and join us.
No, you come and join us. I want you to meet Miss Sundström. Such a charming girl. Mm. Bring some more schnapps, will you? Allow me to introduce Flight Lieutenant Howard.
Howard, you do.
And Captain Clinton. Both very dear friends of mine. They're also paying a short, informal visit to Sweden.
You come straight from England?
Not quite straight.
Well, here's to our little reunion.
Here's to Sweden.
Welcome to Sweden.
Score. Score.
As they sip their drinks, Peter spots a couple exchanging a Nazi salute with a waiter.
Goons in the blog.
Oh, no, no, no. They're only on the German military attaché's staff. They're charming fellows, as a matter of fact. They wouldn't hurt a fly. Here.
They smile and raise their glasses to the pair, who've joined another couple nearby. The attaché staff glower back.
I believe they think we shouldn't be here.
The End.